Welcome to the Gap and Wrap Biosimilar series, where we dive into the world of biosimilars, exploring the groundbreaking advancements and impactful developments. I am your host, Amanda Mixon, and I am very thrilled to have you join us today for an enlightening conversation on a topic that is central to understanding biosimilars. This is the topic of extrapolation. In this episode, we're joined by an esteemed guest, a true expert in the field, and one of my closest friends, Betsy Kirschner. Today, we're going to unravel the complexities of biosimilar extrapolation and shed light on its significance for both gastroenterology and rheumatology communities.
Thanks, Amanda. I'm very excited to be here. It's an honor to be part of the podcast. So extrapolation is not something I think that everyone's well versed in. Before we started recording, we were chatting a little bit about how sometimes this terminology gets a little bit mixed up. But I do think it's important to understand extrapolation as a whole. So I do think this episode is going to be really helpful to rheumatology practitioners, to all our listeners. So thanks again for having me.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. All of these terms can be somewhat complicated to understand. So I think we should just start with the basics. Can you help me and our listeners understand and kind of provide a definition of what extrapolation means with regards to biosimilars?
Sure. Yeah, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm actually going to back it up. So I think if we back it up and remind everybody what a biosimilar is, because if we take it sort of stepwise, it makes extrapolation make more sense. So remember that a biosimilar is a biological product that's highly similar to its reference product. So we just did what every English teacher from when we were 8 years old said not to do, which is to use the term in the definition, but we have to. So it's a biological product that's highly similar to its reference product. Then we go on and we say it has no clinically meaningful differences from a reference product, and it's approved by, in this country, approved by the FDA after going through an abbreviated approval process based on data from analytical studies, animal studies, and a clinical study or studies, right? So that's what we've heard over and over. And right in there, that is sort of where we get into where extrapolation comes in. We say it has no clinically meaningful differences from a reference product. Right? So,
Yes, got
how do we
it.
know? How do we know? Like, what do we mean when we say it has no clinically meaningful differences? Like, so in movies, right? They take two tubes of something and they put it in some machine and it comes up on a screen and they say, oh, it's a match or it's not a match. And that's not really how it works in real life. So how do we know that the biosimilar has no clinically meaningful differences from reference products? So that's part of the sort of debate and definition and sort of the how we wrap our heads around extrapolation. But then the actual definition of extrapolations is when we talk about the extension of that data and evidence from one indication or patient population to another. So we get our data, we say this product that we have is a biosimilar. We say it has no clinically meaningful differences. We can now call it a biosimilar. The FDA says we can call it a biosimilar. And then we take that and we say, we said it was similar enough in this one indication. And then we can extrapolate that out and say it for all of the other indications, some of the other indications, none of the other indications. What about patient populations? Pediatrics, adults. So that is sort of the whole ball of wax of extrapolation that we are taking it, how the biosimilar was approved from one patient population or maybe two, and extrapolating it out to several different patient populations, several different disease states, based on the scientific justification and understanding of the underlying biological and clinical factors. And this extrapolation concept, it plays a crucial role in expanding the approved uses of the biosimilar beyond the specific indications studied in clinical trials. So that's the bottom line, is we do our clinical trial for the biosimilar and we get the approval and we extrapolate out to other disease states and populations.
Got it. So that makes a lot of sense to me now. You know, sometimes I think, you know, when we're here again, when we hear these terms, it's hard to really understand what they mean. And I think that it really is important for us to understand because not only can it help us, but it also can, you know, for example, for me to understand it, but also, you know, when we're talking to patients, because they're going to ask us these questions, what does this mean? I've heard this term, I've heard that term, and you know, how do I, you know, what does this mean for me and in my body and my disease process.
Exactly. Yeah. So what it means for patients is bottom line is just sort of getting drug into patients' bodies. It's making these medications more available to more patients. If every manufacturer had to go through all the clinical trials that the reference product had to go through, there'd be no point in having biosimilars. It's the
Exactly.
extrapolation is what makes them, you know, the concept of extrapolation is what makes them affordable. So
Absolutely. That makes
if
sense.
yeah, if these drugs grew on trees, there'd be no point of having, you know, we wouldn't need some biosimilars. We could just go out and pick our, you know, reference product off the tree in the backyard and give it to ourselves, and that would be that. But they don't grow on trees, and they're very, very expensive to produce and so, you know, develop. So biosimilars are how we make them affordable and get them into more and more patients, hopefully. There's a lot more background to it. Do you want me to go back into it now? You want to go on to something else?
Yes, please
You know,
expand.
I can talk and talk and talk. You just tell me when to stop. So the part that kind of gets hard to understand for me and maybe for other people too, is this idea that biologics are grown, you know, they're grown in living cells. They're not sort of made with a Bunsen burner in a lab, like an aspirin tablet. You know, it's not like you can get the right ingredients and cook it up and there's your aspirin. They're grown, they're in a living cell. So they're never going to be an exact replica to the reference product. But then again, you know, the reference product, the batch that you are making in 2023 is not the same as the batch that was made in 2020 or 2017 or 2012. So even the reference product is a biosimilar to itself. So there is no such thing as an exact replica product. So when patients ask us, well, is this the exact same thing? If you're going to answer honestly, you're going to say, no, it's not. But then that's when you have to find a way to simplify it and say to them, it's not the same exact same thing, but no biologic is the exact same thing. And you know, talk a little bit about how it's grown and not, you know, not just cooked up with chemicals and get into that. And that is relevant to extrapolation too, because there's this extensive analytical functional comparisons are conducted. In order to demonstrate that similarity of the reference product, there's characterization of the biosimilar structure. The easiest example is that to get the higher order structure, like that three-dimensional structure, they can just do that with an ELISA test. So that's one test they do to look at the actual chemical structure. Physicochemical properties, you know, in the lab, this is all stuff that's done in the lab, biological activity, mechanism of action. There are clinical trials performed on biosimilars to establish the safety, efficacy, immunogenicity. Just like with biologics, we have to reference products. We have to make sure that the biosimilar there isn't something a little bit different in the biosimilar that's going to cause our immune systems to make antibodies against it. So there's immunogenicity tests required. The difference is that the biosimilar. These clinical trials are done in perhaps only one or two patient populations, even if the originator drug is approved in three, four, five, six, or more indications. Biosimilar might only be the clinical trial might be run in only one or maybe two patient populations, and then the extrapolation comes in. So it's
Got
based on the
it.
principle that if it's highly similar, has no clinically meaningful differences, we've done all these lab tests, we've done a little clinical trial, then it's reasonable to assume we're going to have similar outcomes in other disease indications and patient populations. So we streamline development, we streamline the approval process, we reduce the need for conducting separate clinical trials, for every single different indication. And we get that medication out faster and in a less expensive way and into more patients, hopefully, at a lower cost.
I really love how you just, you explain things because you, and this is something that you're so good at. You're so good at taking something that really seems very complicated and making it easy for at least me to understand. And so I would extrapolate that then that would also, also be our listeners, that are hopefully listening to this podcast right now.
Well, flattery will get you everywhere, Amanda. Keep going.
Yeah, exactly. No, really, it's a great explanation, and I think that, it's important again that we understand on it. So kind of moving further, can you expound on, why exactly extrapolation is important when it comes to biosimilars?
Sure. We've touched on a little bit already, and it's because of, the top of it is because the need for so many of these drugs. Biologics are not only in rheumatology and gastroenterology. They're in oncology and dermatology and endocrinology. Some of the first biosimilars were in diabetes care, so. They have, the biosimilars have potential significant benefits to many, many, many patients, not just ours. So if we can use extrapolation to get the development and regulatory approval of biosimilars streamlined and into, get more patients cared for, then that's really what we're all here for in the big picture, right? Is to get as many patients, into better healthy states as quickly and affordably as possible. If we had to do separate clinical trials for every different indication for every biologic, it'd be time consuming, costly, duplicative. It's just a more efficient development process. We have all this knowledge. We have so much scientific knowledge around the biologics, so much data about the reference biologics. I mean, some of our biologics have been out for over 25 years. So we can use that data to support the approval of the biosimilars for multiple indications.
So really, it's just, a more efficient way to approval. But again, I think it's important to remember it's a very data-driven process, right?
Absolutely. Yes, it absolutely is. It's not just sort of a cheap and easy fix, it's definitely data driven. It relies on a comprehensive understanding of the reference biologic. The mechanism of action is very important. The disease pathophysiology, the clinical data, the extensive analytical and functional comparisons conducted during the development of biosimilars ensures a high degree of similarity to the reference biologics. So, this scientific foundation, along with the non-clinical, the lab and then the clinical data supports the extrapolation of safety and efficacy across multiple indications. The regulatory agencies, the in the US, it's the FDA, in Europe, it's the European Medicines Agency, and Canada, it's Health Canada. They evaluate the scientific data provided by the biosimilar manufacturers. They consider all these factors. And then they make up their own minds on a case-by-case basis. It's not automatic. It's not granted for all indications. It's not, that if a biosimilar is approved, that it automatically gets extrapolation. It's a comprehensive assessment based on the totality of evidence provided by that biosimilar manufacturer. So they, like I said, they take each case individually, taking into account the specific scientific and clinical factors involved. And that decision to grant extrapolation is based on a thorough assessment of the available evidence and the utmost consideration, especially for patient safety.
When I think that that really is comforting to know and understand that this is a rigorous evidence-based approach. And again, I know I've said this before, but I really do think you've done a great job of really helping us understand the importance of biosimilar extrapolation. I'm interested, in the scientific justification for it. And I think it's something we should have a solid handle on, especially because patients are going to ask us questions on this. I mean, I'm already getting questions. We've, like I said, in a previous podcast, but, we're kind of getting used to this idea of biosimilars with some of our IV therapies, but again, now it's really the sub-Qs as well. So I think, again, the more that we understand, the better that we are going to be equipped to, help our patients understand, and just even for the comfort of knowing that, yes, I can't get you product A, but I can get you product B, which is a biosimilar. Can you tell me a little bit more about the key aspects that might be considered for extrapolation?
Sure. Yeah, just the key aspects. I can't anybody could do all of them. And probably for this one, honestly, we should have one of our PharmDs come in, but we don't have a PharmD, so I'll do my best here. I think probably the key point is understanding the mechanism of action of the reference product and its relationship to the targeted disease. That is essential. The biosimilar should demonstrate that it shares the same mechanism of action as the reference product and the same receptor or target engagement. And that is a big issue with the monoclonal antibodies. The first biosimilars to be approved only had one receptor. It is in endocrinology, and I don't want to get into all that, but the target was only one receptor. With the monoclonal antibodies, they have several receptors. And so there was a lot of hesitancy when the monoclonal antibody biosimilar started coming out, like, is this going to work? Is this even going to fly? Can we prove this? And so now, we have been able to. It's been several years since these biosimilars have been out and being marketed in other countries. But just to sort of illustrate the point, that was this concept of the receptors. Was a big one. Signaling pathways, functional activities, in terms of how the relevance to the therapeutic effect, all of that has to be demonstrated in order for the biosimilarity to be proven. And then all of that knowledge then supports the rationale for extrapolation. So if you've sort of, if these layers build on each other, if the mechanism of action is the same and the receptors are the same and the target engagement is the same, then you're still sort of you're building your case for extrapolation. If you're going to the same targets, if you're going to the same mechanism of action, then you're sort of building a foundation, building a case, and saying this is why we can scientifically justify extrapolating the indications for this product, although we did not do an actual study in this patient population. And then we get into the pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamic studies, to support the biosimilarity. So the absorption, the distribution, the metabolism, PK, the therapeutic response or effect. And if you compare the PK and PD profiles, then again, we have more evidence. We're just sort of shoring up our case for extrapolation to say, look, if quacks like a duck, it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck, then it isn't a duck, but it's similar enough to a duck that we can extrapolate to other indications and other patient populations.
That makes a lot of sense. And again, I think just to reiterate, it's just important to understand all that goes through this. So what about, you kind of touched on this a little bit previously, but talk to me a little bit more about immunogenicity.
Immunogenicity. So we know that in the originator products, we've all seen it happen where one of the reasons sometimes that are the medications that we are so grateful to have sometimes lose efficacy is because the our patients' immune systems recognize them as non-self and make antibodies against them. So that is, sometimes I try and make my patients feel better about it. I'm like, well, least your immune system is doing its job. It's recognizing something that's non-self, and darn that it recognized the medicine that we're trying to use. But yay
Right.
for your immune system. So immunogenicity, we know it's a thing. It happens. One of the reasons we use conventional synthetic DMARDs along with a lot of our medications to try and prevent that from happening. But immunogenicity can also happen with biosimilars. So, which makes sense because if they are as alike as they are claiming to be, then they should also have the downsides as well as the upsides. Now, immunogenicity is a fact of life. It's something we have to deal with. And there was some call several years ago that the biosimilars should have to do studies out to 2 years to prove that they were not more likely to cause immunogenicity than the reference product. That has pretty much fallen by the wayside because that would have made it a more stringent requirement than the reference product. So that has pretty much fallen off. But so far, there has not been in European studies, there has not been more incidence of immunogenicity. The immunogenicity for biosimilars is the rate of it, the incidence of it is the same incidence and rate as the reference products.
Right. So, I think that that's what's important for people to understand. Because I have heard this mentioned a lot is, well, if I put somebody on a biosimilar, are they going to have a higher possibility for immunogenicity because now I'm changing them to a different medicine, et cetera. And so it's just comforting to know that the biosimilar really should demonstrate that comparable immunogenicity to the reference product. Thank you, Betsy, for this really great review of the key aspects that might be considered for extrapolation. To ensure I picked up everything correctly and to reiterate it for our listeners, my understanding is that major things go into consideration here, and really that we're talking about the analytical assessment, mechanism of action, we're talking about PK and PD analysis. What we just discussed, this immunogenicity evaluation and clinical studies. Did I get all of that correct?
You got it.
Awesome. This has been such an informative discussion so far. Let's shift our attention a little bit and talk more about practical aspects. So we kind of understand the nitty-gritty here, but let's talk about just a few take-home messages that really have emerged from our discussion today. First, I think that the most important one for me is, what do you think, if you could pick kind of one thing, what do you think the most important thing for GI and rheumatology APPs would be to know about extrapolation?
This is going to sound like a trite answer, and I don't mean it to be trite at all. I think it's important for us to know that extrapolation exists. To know that when a biosimilar to a reference product comes out, that for one thing, we need to check the label. It might not be approved for every indication that the reference product is approved for. So that's one thing we need to look at. And to understand that product was not necessarily studied in every single patient population, but that everything we just talked about for the last several minutes, all this information and all the information we've gleaned from the reference product from the years we've had that has gone into this confidence level that we have to say, we are going to take all this information, all this knowledge that we have, and rather than waste it, rather than reinvent the wheel, we're going to extrapolate this approval into other indications. So just knowing that it exists, I think is honestly the most important thing for us to know and just understand the basic concept of it, so that if we get questions about it or if our patients are reading about it, we can answer some basic questions for them.
Absolutely. Do you think there's concerns regarding the use of biosimilars in different indications without, kind of conducting a specific clinical trial for that indication?
I think sort of maybe not on a day-to-day in the clinic basis, way, but sort of in an academic way, it's a little bit confusing, frustrating maybe that there's lack of uniformity across countries, across regulatory agencies, that like if you took it one example, there was the first biosimilar monoclonal antibody that was marketed in the EU was for infliximab. It was just CTP13, which is what it's called. And it was approved and marketed for all indications. Even it was studied in RA and ankylosing spondylitis patients, and it was given, approval for all indications using extrapolation. In Health Canada, it was not extrapolated to Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. So everything but Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. And then in other countries, it was not extrapolated to pediatric ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. So, I mean, how many patients are really going to be moving, between regions like that? Probably not too many practitioners, maybe a handful, but you'll catch on quickly. But just sort of in the bigger sense of academia, why are we not agreeing on this concept? That's sort of the bigger frustration is it biosimilar, isn't it? It should sort of be like a binary yes or no kind of a question. And then we should, I think, maybe have more of a solid agreement on what extrapolation means across the agencies. But we don't. One really actually kind of funny story was in India in 2015, and I'm going to use a brand name here because I have to. Humira was not authorized in India, at least back in 2015. It just wasn't. It never was. But the biosimilar was. So a biosimilar to Humira was licensed in India without the reference product ever being licensed there.
Wow, I had no
And
idea.
it was based on one study of 120 RA patients. So 60 patients in each arm, 60 got the reference product, 60 got the biosimilar, and they went ahead and licensed the biosimilar, and they approved it for RA, JIA, AS, PsA, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, but not psoriasis.
What, really?
Yeah. Okay. So another example of sort of like
Yes.
it does undermine your confidence just a little bit about like why not psoriasis and why not the reference product. And but none of this is our deal breakers. They're just sort of like little interesting, and I wouldn't call them controversies either. I think that's what you asked about was maybe controversies, but none of them are controversies. None of them are deal breakers, but they are just sort of things that still need to get ironed out. And there's a lot of smart people working on this, and it'll happen, and eventually there'll be a very standardized understanding and agreement of what extrapolation means. But it's going to take time. This is all sort of a new world to everybody, even though we've had biologics for, over 25 years. That's still not very long when we think about it in the big picture.
Well, and I think too, I do think that, biosimilars, they're here. They're definitely, not going anywhere. And truthfully, you mentioned this earlier. I just think it's going to be a benefit to our patients. I mean, I think this will having more biosimilars means that more patients get on drug, which means that more patients get into remission. And I think that that's what, at the end of the day, we have to really think about. And when we're thinking about biosimilars, whether you agree or don't want to change your patient, I don't know that a lot of it's going to really be up to us. I mean, I think it's going to really be up to the insurance company. But again, if an insurance company will cover, biosimilar A, but not reference product, again, that's still a drug that I can get for my patient to treat whatever disease they have,
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like as long as we keep our goal in mind, which is better patient care, getting more patients on therapy, getting disease under control, that'll help us move forward and not get bogged down too much and too frustrated with all the tiny details.
Absolutely. Are you, so, you know, like I said, we're kind of used to biosimilars, at least in the IV world. Are you getting questions from your patients about biosimilars? And if so, how do you answer it?
Well, in a way. So what I've tried to do or at least found is that most patients don't know about them until we bring them up. And I think probably that is the way to go. I don't want them learning about biosimilars from their insurance company or from some website that's trying to, sway them one way or the other. I want them to hear about it from me. So I'm actually bringing it up, especially with all the flood of adalimumab biosimilars that just hit the market this month. I want them to hear about it from me, not from someone else. So I am bringing it up with my patients, and that way I can give them anticipatory guidance. And then once they do know, the most common question I get is, well, is it safe? You and I have been in this a long time in rheumatology, and the best part I think about rheumatology is that we get to know our patients and we have these long-term relationships with them, and they trust us. And it's a profound gift. It's a profound responsibility. So most of the time they just sort of look you in the eye and they ask you, they say, well, is it safe? Would you do it? If I was your mom, would you let me go on this medication? And so you just need to sort of get yourself educated and give them the most informed and honest answer that you can. And but that's really what I'm hearing most when I do bring it up with patients, is saying, you might hear something about these different medications coming out, your formulary might change. Well, I promise to keep you up to date on stuff, and you'll be part of the decision-making process every step of the way.
I could not agree more, and I think that that's really our, to your point, our patients trust us, and so we have to be confident with what we tell our patients and have the information so that, you know, we are well educated on it. And I think that that's what's truly important as we talk to our patients. With that, it really does kind of bring us to the end of another insightful episode of the Biosimilar series. I hope that you all enjoyed our deep dive into the world of biosimilar extrapolation with our incredible guest, Betsy. You know, I always love doing any kind of podcast with you. So thank you so much for being here, Betsy.
Thanks so much for having me, Amanda. It's always a pleasure.
Well, as we all know, biosimilars are poised to have a major impact on the care of gastroenterology and rheumatology patients in the near future and now, really. We hope today's discussion has provided you with a succinct understanding of extrapolation, a topic that really is at the core of understanding biosimilars. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gap and Wrap Biosimilars podcast series. I would like to say thank you again to Pfizer and Amgen. Without their continued support of APP education, this podcast would not be possible. Please see our show notes at the end for learning objectives from this episode and to fill out an evaluation so we can receive feedback. Make sure you join us next time as we discuss interchangeability and switching of biosimilars. Remember, please, to follow GapCast and WrapCast so you don't miss an episode. Until next time, take care.